Good morning. Nice to have you company for Talking Horses. I'm sure many of you who are tuned in on this chilly morning are feeling very pleased and relieved about the rain that's fallen throughout the state this week. What a welcome sight it's been for farms, and already you can see how well the ground has responded with a lot of green shooting up already. The weather's certainly getting a bit on the brisk side now, so a special shout out to those of you out braving the elements to do the early morning feed runs right at this point in time. We have some very special guests lined up for you on the show this morning, including Victorian breeder Bob Scarborough, who bred last week's English 2000 Guineas winner. Bob, the former chairman of the Moonee Valley Racing Club, shares the backstory of the result, which puts the top breeder in rare company as far as achievements go in classic races of the Northern Hemisphere. Also joining us this morning is Carmel Size, a horse she selected as a yearling and now manages on behalf of Hong Kong owners. Classique Legend is heading to the Everest in October. His owner purchased the slot of GPI Racing. More on that story later. But first, in big staff news for the Australian bloodstock industry, highly regarded horsewoman Alex Kingston has taken up an exciting role to manage a new thoroughbred farm being established in the New South Wales Southern Highlands. Alex has been stud manager at the famed Kia Ora in the Hunter Valley for the past 9 years and is looking forward to the big move.
RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
It was announced this week that B2B Thoroughbreds will set up a boutique farm in the New South Wales Southern Highlands. And what is a major coup for the operation, Ricky Sirachi, the owner of B2B Thoroughbreds, has secured the services of longtime Kia Ora stud manager Alex Kingston to lead this exciting new project. And she joins us on Talking Horses this morning. Congratulations on the new appointment, Alex.
Thank you. It's a real privilege.
It sure is. So tell us all about how this opportunity came up, because it was a big move for you to decide to leave Kia Ora after such a long time.
Definitely. I guess I've been sort of thinking about moving with my family for a little while and hadn't really had an opportunity come up. And then I met Ricky Sirace, at the Magic Millions, and we seemed to hit it off very well. And he had a really great vision that I tended to like as well. And I guess it just clicked from there, and we started talking and we went and looked at farms together, and it just went from there.
So the property that has been secured is in a prime location in the Mittagong Barrel area, which is pretty heavily populated these days. He's done well to find a parcel of land there the size of about 160 acres to set up the operation.
Yeah, definitely. We'd looked at many farms down there over a period of, I guess, he's been looking for over 2 years, but when I got involved, we started looking at properties every week. Going down there and looking at least 3 to 4 a week until we found what we wanted.
Mm. So you're on a month's break at the moment in between jobs. Take us back to the days of Kia Ora, Alex, and the role that you played there, which was significant. It would have been a major decision for you to take up this opportunity and leave the comfort zone, I guess, of Kia Ora.
Yeah, it was a very difficult decision, and obviously one not made lightly, just because I was such an integral part of Kia Ora. I started at Kia Ora as the assistant manager, and it went on from there, and I got offered the sub-manager's job, and I had a very good relationship with Mr. Krishnan. I helped him, obviously, start Kia Ora, as in start building his broodmare band to a very successful yearling preparation, and then going on to produce million-dollar yearlings for him.
What was the most satisfying experience you had during your tenure there?
I guess I followed down all the foals at Kia Ora and watching them grow out and then preparing them for as yearlings. You know, you have a type of rapport with all of the horses that come through there, and, you know, I'm very proud of obviously what I've done there and the horses that are coming off the farm now.
The owner of Kiora, Ananda Christian, is he very involved and hands-on with the business, or were you left with a fair degree of autonomy to run the show?
On the physical side of things, the day-to-day running and the preparation and everything like that, everything's left up to me. He's involved with the mating plan, the final decision. And apart from that, he's at a distance. I just tell him what's going on day-to-day, and I delegate, like, where the horses go to sales, if they should be sold at weanlings, and then obviously the breeding plan. I put forward a breeding plan to him, and then he makes a final decision.
Mm. Prior to joining Kiora, you spent quite a bit of time in the US, so working for some major operations there, including Three Chimneys.
Yes, I went over there not fresh out of uni, but with a drive to obviously go over and learn as much as I could in what I thought was about 12 months, which turned out to be 6 years. So over there, it's an amazing opportunity to learn, and I obviously embraced it and took as much as I could out of it, especially at Three Chimneys, Ashford, Coolmore, and then at Kesmark, a big rehabilitation centre. And then I ended up managing Bluewater Farm and Sales for Meg Levy and became very close to her, which we are very much in contact still.
He was a very big mentor to you during that time, and as you say, still is today?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, no, very, very close still.
What were some of the key learnings from your experience at Bluewater Farm in particular?
I guess attention to detail for Meg Levy, the way she prepares and the attention to detail at the sales and the way we presented huge numbers of horses and the ability to do it and make them all look the same.
And Kesmark sounds like an interesting experience. So take us through the processes there, because rehabilitation is such a fundamental part of racing globally these days. So what did you learn there that you've been able to bring back to Australia?
Kesmark is a very big rehabilitation centre which has hyperbaric chambers, solariums, walkers, swimming pools, aqua treads. So the ability, I guess, to learn how to rehab a horse correctly and using the facilities that they had was very vital, I think, going forward.
Will you be adopting a lot of those things to what you're doing, obviously, at B2B? It's mainly focused on developing yearlings for the major sales market, but I guess there'll be some rehab-type work and other important care that you'll need to embrace for those horses.
Yeah, same at Kiora. Obviously, all the spelling horses that came home all got, you know, the utmost care. We had some very interesting cases come back to Kiora that I was able to work with Angus Atkins from Scone Vets with. And you know, rehabilitation is so important to get a horse back to its health to be able to race on as well.
Mm. So onwards now to B2B Thoroughbreds in the Southern Highlands. So you'll be starting there formally very soon.
Yes.
What are the stages now? Because you're basically starting with a blank canvas. So how much work has already commenced on the development of the actual farm?
So we planted yesterday and we're finishing today, so we're just obviously putting pastures down today. Then there's a big 37 metre shed that's there that we're going to kit out fully with stables and just use what's already existing as a broodmare area. We'll obviously put in a foaling area there, so a huge amount of fencing at the moment. As soon as I get there, we're going to obviously tear down all the fences and put up fences as soon as we can.
The owner of the business, Ricky, is well known in racing circles for having had recent success, especially with a horse he purchased, Ring a Ding Ding, a Group 2 winner of the Sandown Guineas. He's got a very nice broodmare band, which is around 33 horses at the moment, which I believe he wants to expand to around 50?
Yes, that's correct. His intention, obviously, when we first met was to expand, and I'm obviously with him to do whatever he wants to do, and I'm there to facilitate and grow out the horses for him and get them to the sales as best I can.
And the main goal is obviously to breed and develop horses for the yearling sales markets. There will be times, though, where it will be very tempting, I'm sure, to keep one or two to race.
I would think so. I mean, obviously, fillies would be, you know, very important for him to keep, to try and expand his broodmare band as well. But the main goal at the moment is to breed race horses, because that's how Ricky has come across to a lot of people, that he is very, very good at producing racehorses. So that's what we're focusing on, and obviously being able to provide them for the market.
And maybe I, Alex, is part of the broodmare band at the moment, the dam of Ring-a-Ding-Ding, and she'll obviously be one of the key mares going forward. She's currently got a full brother to Ring-a-Ding-Ding on the ground, and she's in foal again to Sebring at the moment.
Yeah, which is exciting for Ricky, obviously. With, unfortunately, Sebring dying as well, it's going to be a massive... it's going to be very important that, obviously, we get these to the sales and be able to promote them as much as we can.
Mm. Alex, what an exciting opportunity for you. How does it stack up to compared to other things that you've done throughout your career? I would suggest it's the biggest and most exciting challenge you've probably been presented with.
Oh, it's definitely exciting and probably one of the most difficult challenges I've ever been given, but I'm ready for a change, and obviously to be able to do this from the ground up for Ricky and work alongside him to get it to where he's happy with it, and that it's functional, workable, and that we have a very good work relationship.
Mm. Ricky has shares in numerous stallions, including Star Witness, Cable Bay, Extravagant with New Haven Park, and also Coolmore's Merchant Navy. Is there ever a chance that longer term you would consider standing a stallion at B2B Thoroughbreds, or is that completely out of the equation?
I would think it would be completely out of the equation, but anything's possible, I guess. Location probably for the Hunter Valley obviously isn't in the prime to stand a stallion down there, but I would think Ricky, the way he buys into shares in stallions, he'll keep doing that, and when the time's right, obviously Ring-a-Ding-Ding will get sold, and you know, he'll stand somewhere else.
Alex, thanks for talking to us on the program this morning, and once again, congratulations on your appointment and all the best of luck. I'm sure you'll make a real fist of it.
Oh, thank you very much.
That's Alex Kingston, the newly appointed stud manager for B2B Thoroughbreds, currently setting up in the Southern Highlands of New South Wales.
RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
The results that matter. The Talking Horses racing run through.
Racing at Caulfield yesterday, and we opened the program with the Grunt standing at Yulong, quality handicap over 2,400 metres. It was won by Al Faris, a five-year-old gelding by Shamadal, out of a Dan Silly mare, Rose Etoile Noir. William Thomas was the winner of race two, a benchmark 78 over 1,100 metres. William Thomas is a four-year-old gelding by Nikoni, out of a fast-knit rock mare, Girls Rock, and is related to a winner, Janice. The third event on the program, the Rod Fenwick handicap over the mile, Zutori successful, a three-year-old gelding by Zoostar, out of a Harada Sun mare, Atatori. Zutori was sold for $160,000 at the 2017 English Australian Easter yearling sales. Race four, the Ian Miller handicap over a mile, Aaron Purcell producing the winner of that, Gizot, a six-year-old gelding by Tertullian out of a Dyna former mare, Guantana. This horse is related to a winner, Gardini. The Darren Gauchy handicap was race five at Caulfield yesterday, over 1,100 metres. And success went to All About Nikki, a six-year-old mare by Nikoni out of a Woodman mare, Villana. All About Nikki is related to winners Talana and Voltage Storm and was a bargain buy for $30,000 at the 2014 Inglis Premier Yearling Sales. The listed Vale Redoutes Choice Stakes over 1,200 metres, won by Missile Mantra from Snowden Racing's team. Missile Mantra is a two-year-old filly by Smart Missile out of a Starcraft mare, We Can Say. Missile Mantra is a $30,000 graduate of the Magic Millions Gold Coast Yearling Sales of 2018. Race 7 on the program at Caulfield yesterday was run over 1,100 metres and the winner was Bams on Fire, a three-year-old filly by Universal Ruler out of a Holy Roman Emperor mare, I'm Your Fire. Race 8, the Spicer Thoroughbreds handicap over 1,200 metres and success went the way of Order of Command, four-year-old gelding by Squamosa out of a Command's mare, Commanding Angel. Order of Command is related to a winner, Angel's Crown. And the last at Caulfield yesterday was the JRA Benchmark 84, run over 1,800 metres. And Remember the Name was too good, a four-year-old daughter of Lope de Vega, out of a Flying Spur mare, Spur Sense. Remember the Name is related to a number of winners, Centibile, Champing, Living Choice, Londaro, Percentage, Sporendus and Thousand Wishes. The Queensland Racing Carnival stepped up a notch yesterday with one of the feature races being the listed Queensland Day Stakes over 1,350 metres. That was won by Vega 1 from the Tony Gollan Yard, a three-year-old gelding by Lope de Vega, out of a Distorted Humour mare, One Funny Honey. Vega 1 is related to a winner, One More Honey, and was bought for $75,000 out of the 2017 Magic Millions Adelaide Yearling Sales. The Group 3 Rough Habit Plate over 2,000 metres was won by Purple Sector, a three-year-old colt by Pins out of a Zabeel mare, Eden Valley. Purple Sector is related to winners Euphonium, Let's Get Sideways, Our Fox Wedge and Vine Vale. Purple Sector was bought for $60,000 at the 2017 edition of the New Zealand Bloodstock Premier Yearling Sales. The Group 2 Champagne Classic and deserved success went to the nuggety little colt Dubious, a colt by Not a Single Doubt, out of an elusive city mare, Suspicious. Dubious was sold for $350,000 at the 2018 Magic Millions Gold Coast Yearling Sales. And the listed Newington Farm Members Handicap over 1,600 metres was won by Arcademus for the Gwenda Markwell Yard, a five-year-old gelding by Lope de Vega. What a day on the track that stallion had yesterday. Arcademus is out of a Ponce Celebre mare, Caroline's Star, and is related to winners Celebrator, Mandy Lion and Oceanica. And the Group 1 Doomben 10,000 over 1,200 metres. What an outcome here. It was an upset. Victory going to the long shot, the Bostonian, at odds of 50-1. Four-year-old gelding by Jimmy Chu out of a keeper mare, Keeper Cheval. The Bostonian is related to winners Chaucer and Vitesse and was bought out of the 2016 New Zealand Bloodstock Premier Yearling Sales. He beat home the favourite Osborne Bulls, who ran home in his customary fast finishing style. And the Group 3 Kieran Chairman's Handicap over 2,000 metres was won by LaJuge from the Chris Waller Yard, a six-year-old gelding by Dan Silly out of a King Mambo mare, Mambo Light. And across in Adelaide yesterday, we had feature racing there as well with the carnival in full swing. The listed Adelaide Guineas over the mile was won by So We Are from the Philip Stokes team, a three-year-old filly by So You Think out of a B and Coney mare, We See Attitude. So We Are is related to a winner, Go Straight and Hard. And the Group 1 South Australian Derby run over 2,500 metres. Success going to the Not a Single Doubt filly, Quafila from the Hayes Dabenig team. Quafila was bought for $450,000 at the 2017 Magic Millions Gold Coast Yearling Sales.
The Talking Talking Horses, winner of the week.
Single blonde cornered well into the straight, led a length into half on Libertini. Berry hasn't moved on the favourite just yet. Two lengths away, then Just Field, and then K-Makari, Regimental Band, and Egyptian Missile. But now we ask the question of Libertini, and she exploded away. Race three clear, Regimental Band ran to second, Just Field battles away. But she is a star. Libertini eased down in a hand canter. Won by 2.5, Regimental Band.
I'm Invincible filly Libertini stamped herself as a potential Group 1 horse of the future on Friday at Scone when she won the Yarraman Park-sponsored Listed Woodland Stakes, giving her sire his 27th Australian Stakes winner for the season. I'm Invincible had been on 26 Stakes winners, which equaled the previous record for Stakes winners in a season, shared by the great Dane Hill and Snitzel. Libertini, a homebred for Gerry Harvey, is trained by Anthony Cummings, was second on debut in the Group 3 ATC Kindergarten Stakes during the carnival and then an easy winner at Randwick on Anzac Day. She was sent out the hot favourite at Scone and won quite impressively. She's a serious blue blood, being the third winner from three foals to race from Group 1 ATC Coolmore Classic winner Aloha, a half-sister by Encosta DeLago to the dam of Group 2 winner My Emotion. This is the famed Tennessee that has also produced recent Group 1 winners Seabrook and Malagira. Libertini is the 46th stakes winner for Yarraman Park's superstar sire I Am Invincible, who stands this spring at a fee of just under $250,000.
RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
Victoria's Bob Scarborough, the former owner of Woodnook Farm at Ngambie and long-time chairman of the Moonee Valley Racing Club, achieved a major milestone during the week when a horse he bred, Magna Grecia, won the Group 1 2000 Guineas in England. Bob's our next guest on Talking Horses this morning. Nice to have you join us, Bob, and well done. What a great thrill for you.
Yeah, good morning, Joe. Thank you. It was fabulous.
I bet it was. Now, take us back to the story of Magna Grecia and how this horse came about.
I bought the mare in 2011. I paid 600,000 guineas for her in foal to Dane Hill Dancer. I got a filly foal and sold it as a yearling for 500,000 sterling, or guineas, to the Niarchos family, and I was pretty much out of it, you know, in one hit. So it was a lovely start.
It was. And you've been breeding horses in the Northern Hemisphere for quite a number of years now and built a very nice band of mares up in that part of the world.
Yeah, I started in the mid-90s and I've always had one or two mares sort of at the pointy end, you know, nice pedigrees, well-performed. And I started with a mare called Race the Wild Wind. I bought her in Kentucky, I think in about 1997.
When did this all start for you on a really serious note, breeding horses in the Northern Hemisphere, Bob?
Well, that was probably the start of it. I paid 700,000 US for her in foal to Nureyev. She had a colt foal that went through the ring 12 months later and made 1.5 million US, which was a world record for a foal. And it turned out to be a horse called King Charlemagne, who went on and won the Prix Maurice de Geest, a Group 1 in France. Turned out to be a stud, and he shuttled here. He wasn't a great success at stud, but he's a pretty good racehorse.
Breeding a winner of a race of this calibre, one of the English classics, for you personally and professionally must be enormously satisfying.
Yeah, I think really the pinnacle of probably what I've done for most of my life. I've bred or raced 13 individual Group 1 winners, but I think this would probably take the cake.
I bet. Describe the feeling. No doubt you were watching the race live from back here in Australia when the horse saluted. For you, how did that compare to other major races, as you say, if you've won and had success in?
Well, I was a long way away, so from a point of view of the emotion of it, I was pretty excited sitting and watching the television here, but I probably had more exciting moments on a race course winning a Group 1.
Bob, you're the second Australian-based breeder to produce a 2000 Guineas winner. You now join fellow Victorian David Haynes as having achieved that feat.
Yeah, I remember him breeding Mystico to win the 2000 Guineas sometime in the early 90s.
And Magna Grecia is a colt by Invincible Spirit, of course, a notable sire here in Australia of I Am Invincible, and his dam Cabaret herself, a juvenile Group 3 winning daughter of Coolmore's Galileo by the legendary Sadler's Wells, of course.
Yes, she's got a pretty good pedigree, Cabaret, without being an absolute blue blood, but it's a nice pedigree. She's a half sister to a couple of other group stakes winners. She's had a few foals now, and I went through the process of considering selling her last year. But along came Magna Grecia, and I very quickly changed my mind. So you can get a bit lucky in those things. I could have easily had her for sale, and no longer had her.
No, she's becoming a true blue hen. How old would she be now, Bob?
I think she is 11.
So still plenty ahead of her. What are the likely plans going forward then?
She's undercover to Invincible Spirit now. She's got a two-year-old filly by Kodiak that I still have. I had her in the French sales last year, and she didn't make a reserve. I guess that's probably turned out to be a good thing. She's got a yearling colt by Siuni, who's very attractive, and she's got a colt foal by Siuni that's also very attractive. So I've got a couple of things to sell, which I'm looking forward to, and of course their value has been enhanced by the performance of Magna Grecia.
Yeah. Bob, you sold Woodnook back in 2017, and off that farm you enjoyed enormous success with a Trans-Tasman Derby double, hit the roof, of course, winning the Victoria Derby, and Like a Gov picking up the New Zealand Derby. And you also had some other very good horses, the likes of Sleek Chassis and Gold Ace.
Indeed. Final Card and Gold Ace, Marble Halls, the two Derby winners. Light Fantastic followed a bit later on with the Australian Guineas. I bred Gallica, who was a reduced choice filly that won the 1000 Guineas and the Australasian Oaks. So all of that was an awful lot of fun over a near 20-year period.
I'm sure it was. And one of the biggest moments for you as a breeder was in the 2014 Cox Plate when the Coolmore-owned Aidan O'Brien trained Adelaide was successful, a horse that you have an influence in.
Well, I noticed it got written up somewhere that I, in fact, actually bred Adelaide, but I didn't. I actually owned his mother for a very brief period of time. She was carrying a full brother to Adelaide by Galileo, and she died very, very shortly after I bought her. So I didn't end up getting the full relative to Adelaide, and the whole thing turned out to be a bit of a disaster. Other than I did have her insured, so it didn't end up being a financial disaster, but it could have been so much more.
What are you doing back here in Australia with breeding these days, or have you got more of your interests and finances tied up with the Northern Hemisphere, Bob?
Well, most of it's in the Northern Hemisphere, but where I've got five mares, all going to very fashionable stadiums, and I'm selling the resultant progeny into the market there. But By default, I've ended up with two mares here, so I don't know what I'm going to do with the progeny, whether I sell them or whether the mares go, but I've got two mares, one in foal to So You Think and the other to Written Tycoon, and both stallions are doing well, so I'm unsure exactly what I'll do, but I'll possibly race them for a bit of fun.
Bob, but what's your view on the current state of affairs in the Victorian breeding and racing industry?
I think the racing industries are very strong. You know, we've had a lot of controversies and whatever else, but I think RBL are dealing with all of that extremely well, and I think there's a certain level of confidence and integrity in the state. So the prize monies are wonderful. I think our breeding industry is certainly on the improve, and I think we've got some wonderful opportunities with some of the younger stallions. It's nice to see Toronado have a little bit of success in both hemispheres. I think he's potentially a superstar for the state. There are others.
And we've seen a number of Chinese-owned operations setting up in Victoria over the past couple of years as well.
Yeah, that's a real positive. I mean, they're clearly spending an enormous amount of money on breeding stock and yearlings, particularly fillies, that can come into broodmare bands here and support stallions that are standing here. I think that's a wonderful thing. I think we're very lucky.
And Moonee Valley, where you were chair for so many years and on the committee for some 15 years, Bob, is going through its own huge transformation at the moment.
It is indeed, and I think when it's completed, I think it'll be absolutely outstanding. The club's future will be assured for a very lengthy period of time. I think the club's doing a wonderful job, and I think it augurs well for everyone involved in the industry.
And it will be rewarding for you to see all of those plans come to fruition, because you played such an instrumental role in getting the ball rolling, so to speak, with all of that.
Well, I did, and I will get some satisfaction in seeing it complete. I spent an awful lot of time involved in it, and I am looking forward to seeing what comes.
And as for Magna Graecia, Bob, what are the racing plans from here on in with the horse? Because I've no doubt it's got a following here in Australia now, and our listeners would be keen to know where it will be running next and what the longer-term plans might be as well.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he's going to end up being, he'll clearly end up a stallion. He's now won two Group 1s, so, and I suspect because of his pedigree, he's a very likely chance to be a shuttler here. As far as I know, he's going to run in the Irish 2000 Guineas, which is later in the month, and then go on, subject to him holding form, he will go on to the St James's Palace Stakes at Royal Ascot around about the 20th of June.
Lovely. Bob, thanks for joining us on the program this morning. Lovely to catch up with you.
It's my pleasure, Joe, and great to talk to you.
That's Bob Scarborough, who this week bred the winner of the English 2000 Guineas, Magna Graecia, destined for much bigger success after this.
Raising horses to become racing stars. RSN 927 is Talking Horses.
In major news this week, it was confirmed that GPI Racing have sold their slots in the world's richest turf race, the Everest, to the connections of Classique legend. Based in Hong Kong, Bon Ho will now take over the prized berth in the Everest, and a big part of this whole transaction and the story of Classique legend is Carmel Size, who joins us as a special guest on Talking Horses this morning. How are you, Carmel?
Good, thank you, Joe. It's a great morning, isn't it?
It is, and a great week it's been for you and the connections of Classique legend securing a berth in the Everest for this October.
Well, it's nothing like a bit of pressure on ourselves. But, you know, we just thought that the opportunity presented itself. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for us. We understand that it is a great leap of faith in our horse. It might not, you know, it might not work out. We're racing people. We're prepared to take that risk. And if it doesn't work out for us, we can always find another horse to represent our slot. But certainly the goal is, but we have a lot of faith in Classique Legend, and the goal is to aim the horse at the Everett.
Mm. The process of negotiation would have been an interesting one behind the scenes, I'm sure.
Well, it was highly confidential, not very good at keeping secrets. So I've been working on it for about 3 weeks. But seriously, the Golden Eagle was the target race, and I had a lot of representation, had people approaching me to negotiate for their slots. And then when the GPI slot became available, we thought, what a great opportunity. You know, I hadn't had so much outside interest and other people having faith in the horse. We probably may not have considered it so seriously before we took this leap of faith in the horse.
And what a horse he's shaped up to being, Carmel. You must be so pleased with his performances over the Autumn Carnival.
Well, you know, he's had one barrier jump out. We took him away to the Hawkesbury Barrier Trials and, you know, I strapped him myself. I'm still, like, turning the clock back a little bit with his horse. And then we took him straight to the races. And I think, from memory, had his first race start on about the 20th of February, and to have... at his fourth start, first preparation to win a Group 2, pretty impressive. And, you know, he's just pretty straightforward horse. He's a very intelligent horse. We gave him a little bit of time leading up to his three-year-old campaign. Obviously, he wasn't seen at the trial. He had a little issue, but he takes horse time can be a remarkable thing for them. You know, everything works out for the best in the end.
And take us back to when you purchased this horse and what it was that was so appealing about him.
It's hard to put into words what I see in a horse, but I had a very, very strong connection with the horse, and I was always going to buy him. I actually thought he was underpriced. I would have gone much further for him, and that's probably going to disappoint the vendor when they hear that statement. Since I purchased the horse, actually, I've become friends with the proprietors of Tyrrell Stud and kept them informed what's happening with the horse. But I just loved him. You know, there was just something about him. I bought two horses at that sale, and we had great success with both of the horses, but I just loved that horse so much. He's just perfect. Mm. He's confirmation. He had a presence. He got around, good, loose, casual walker. Also, he's got the great white patch on his rump and his foreleg, which is something unique. I'm always looking for something unique about a horse. I mean, it's not his markings, but sort of like that from what I feel the deal as well. You know, so he just stood out to me.
Mm. Carmel, you do a lot of buying for the Hong Kong market. Your relationship with Bon Ho, the owner of Classique Legend, how far does that go back and how did that all come about?
Well, I actually work exclusively for Mr. Ho. I've been working for him for about 5 years now. I don't buy horses for other people because Mr. Ho would deem that a conflict of interest. As you know, it sometimes can be a tough life for a lady in Hong Kong. And when I decided to come home, apparently I brought Mr. Ho's luck home with me. So I'd been home a couple of years and he came looking for me. And, Hong Kong number came up on my phone and I thought that was a bit strange and I questioned whether I would answer that number. And thankfully I did. It was Mr. Ho looking for me. And he had a brief for me to buy a horse, to qualify a horse to go to Hong Kong. And thankfully that horse was Southern Legend. We didn't pay very much money for Southern Legend, but he's been a super horse in Hong Kong. You know, he's a great horse to us in Australia. It's always a hard act to follow. You know, you buy a good horse for somebody, it's their first horse, and then you've got to back it up. You know, very hard act to follow.
So what a journey then, Mr. Ho, finding you on the telephone call and obviously offering you the opportunity to help him source horses here in Australia. And it's been such a great journey in a reasonable amount of time, 5 years, to unearth several high-class horses, the latest being Classique Legend. What was the activity that you both undertook at the recent yearling sales in Sydney and the Gold Coast? Were you proactive there, getting horses for the future?
Well, I had my first trip to the Gold Coast this year, and I didn't buy at the Gold Coast. I presume that I may in the future. But at the we bought at the Classic Sale. We actually bought a couple of very nice horses at the Classic Sale. They're being broken in at the moment. Mr. Ho came down. He spent more than 72 hours in Sydney with me, which was great. He normally comes for a flying visit, and when he came down, we were able to go to the farm and look at the horses, and we had a trip to Gosford Races, and we decided we would buy higher-priced horses at this sale. I had my first $1 million purchase at the sale. We bought another Not a Single Doubt. We loved the Not a Single Doubt out of Zillow from Arrowfield Stud. And we also bought Brazen Bow's Full Brother from Yarraman. And I bought another little Not a Single Doubt as well that I liked very much indeed.
And are these horses predominantly to race in Australia or Hong Kong? How does it all sort of work in terms of prioritising their futures? Obviously, there are limitations to the number of horses an owner can have in Hong Kong and all of that. But what's sort of the main goal? Is it getting horses for Bon Ho here in Australia or back in Hong Kong?
Well, obviously, from a Hong Kong owner's point of view, they want to take their best horse to Hong Kong. And like with Classic Legend, I feel like I've climbed half the mountain in convincing Mr. Ho to get the horse in Australia. He wanted to take the horse to Hong Kong, knowing that he was on the rise, that he would probably go up there and he'd be able to race through his classes quite quickly. So predominantly the brief is, and I'm told consistently, I want to have a good horse in Hong Kong. But it comes down to when we buy horses as yearlings, Joe, it comes down after you get them broken in and get them to the racing stable, what their temperament's like. Now, not every horse is suited to the Hong Kong environment. And we've had the situation, we've had handy horses here, but they haven't had the correct temperament. And that's the advantage of me working in the stable with the horses, that I get to know the horses. And having had experience in the Hong Kong racing scene, I can sort that out pretty quickly. So we're quite happy to race. We're quite happy to race horses in Sydney. Mr. Ho also has horses in Melbourne with John Sadler. We're quite happy to have horses in Australia to race that don't go to Hong Kong.
Les Bridge has been entrusted to train Classique Legend, and he's a very experienced and accomplished horseman who has a high opinion of the horse.
Yes, and he's a man of few words. And a couple of days after that, we won the Arrowfield with the horse, I was early hours of the morning. Les comes into the stables and looks at all the feed bins, and he's a couple boxes down. And I heard him say, "I think he's the best horse I've ever trained." And my head almost swiveled off my shoulders because it was a quite unprompted statement. And I've never... Les is not big on outlandish statements, so it came from the heart and something that he believed in.
Yeah, it's not something you take lightly from Les, as you say, and that horse is now realising or vindicating the belief that he has in him.
That's correct, but we quite understand that he has to make the natural progression. We quite understand that, but knowing the horse and knowing what has come from this preparation, if it works out, he can do it. He has the ability to do it. He's, you know, we had a discussion about running the horse in the Arrowfield or the South Pacific Classic, one being a Group 2 and one being a listed race. Liz is very keen to run the horse in the listed race. In the discussions that I had with him, he said to me, Carmel, if it was next preparation, I wouldn't be scared to run the horse in anything. I just think it's too soon. This Group 2 race is coming too soon for the horse. But obviously, we know who the victor of that argument was with the results that we got.
Carmel, personally, you come from a long line of highly regarded horse people, of course, the daughter of Hall of Fame trainer Neville Begg. Who would you say is or has been the greatest influence on your life and work in racing, and who have you learned the most from and applied then to your selection of horses today?
That's a very interesting question, because I come from my father's of the era of men that think the girls should probably be in the office. But I mean, I was with the with my father at the stables, and I was just quietly picking things up. But I think the most experience I've had is the hands-on experience. And I had, apart from Pony Club, the racehorse hands-on experience I had was with my ex-husband, John Size. You know, he taught me so much about different aspects of treating horses, about training horses and things like that. I learnt the textbook knowledge, the pedigrees from my father. I learnt what goes on behind the scenes, but the hands-on experience you cannot beat.
How much has it changed for women in the bloodstock industry, do you feel, from when you first embarked on a career in that?
Oh, I think it's just gone to the flip side of the coin. Like, I'm closer to 60 now than what I am 50, unfortunately, and I dearly wish that I was closer to 40. It has just, it's been dramatic. You know, and I was only thinking recently, Gay Waterhouse, and I'm sure she must have had some battles with her father too, over heading into being a horse trainer, wanting to be with the horses. And it just made me realise what a huge accomplishment she has in racing, that she's made her way to the top. You know, I've just got the highest respect and regard for what Gay has been able to achieve. It's a different world, you know. I turn up at the stables every morning and I look around, and all the stables, I would say predominantly young ladies are involved in the handling and the care of the horses. We didn't see that when I was growing up, you know. I just think it's wonderful. It is really, really wonderful, because the young ladies are just so kind to the horses. And that's something that Johnny did teach me. The kinder you are to the horse and the happier the horse is, the better results you'll get.
No doubt about that. Carmel, well done on all you're achieving yourself now in the industry. In the tough scene that is Hong Kong racing, owners there are not easy to appease, but you're certainly keeping Bon Ho very happy at the moment and found him a good horse in Classique Legend. So what's the plan then for the horse from here on in towards October and the Everest?
Well, I'm going to the farm. So he's in the paddock at the moment. I'm going up to the farm just to have a check on him on Tuesday. He would have been out a month on Thursday. I would presume at the moment the plan is to bring him back about the second week of June. He'll have one or two barrier trials, and the horse will tell us what he needs, whether he needs two races leading into the Everest or probably two barrier trials, one run going into the Everest. We'll work it out when the time comes closer, because it is the 19th of October. It is some time away. So what we're going to do, we're going to give the horse a little bit extra time in case anything goes wrong. I mean, you can have stone bruises, as you know. Things go wrong with horses every day, you know. Touch wood, nothing goes wrong with my horse. But we're just going to make sure, you know, that he's right for the Everest. That's our target. And we won't be unrealistic. If something goes wrong, we'll look for another horse to represent our slot.
Excellent. Carmel, it's wonderful to catch up with you, and we'll look forward to following the progress of Classique Legend for you and Bon Ho towards the Everest in October. Enjoy the trip up to the farm to see him next week.
Okay, thanks, Jo. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
That's Carmel Size, a special guest on Talking Horses this morning. We'll be back to wrap up right after this.
RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
And that's all we've got time for on this week's edition of Talking Horses. Hope you enjoyed the program. Special thanks to our guests this week, Bob Scarborough, Carmel Size, and Alex Kingston. Until next time, take care. Bye for now.